We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
KGMC-FM and HD1, KGMC San Francisco, a radio.com station, 95.7 The Game.
Good morning, diarrhea!
It's time to wake up. It's 5, and we're live.
Oh, is this thing on? I don't care. I want him to hear.
This is the pregame show, your early morning shot of sports on 95.7 The Game.
Come on!
Okay, it's here.
Woo! What's here?
We are.
Oh, okay.
Nah, we're here.
Okay, we're here. So we're here.
The NFL schedule's here. Game three is here.
All kinds of stuff's here.
But more importantly, we're here.
That's true.
Because it's 5 a.m. and this is what matters, is the connection that we have right now as you are possibly driving into work or having an incredibly late night.
Yeah. You know, it is 5 o'clock somewhere. It's 5 o'clock right now, so it's 5 o'clock here. Kind of going with the whole here thing.
5 a.m. though, and it's early one, but...
You do you, people.
We are glad to have you in. We got the 49ers and the Raiders and their schedules. The 49ers with, I'm not going to say an easy schedule by any means, but when I'm looking side by side at the 49ers and Raiders schedules, both.
Raiders, I don't know what
anything,
they did to
anything
them.
Compared to that looks mediocre. Mm-hmm. So we'll get into that. Plus, we had some great sound from Kevin Durant yesterday, which made the rounds on Twitter. If you exist on Twitter, then you probably saw it because there was a bunch of people retweeting it and giving Kevin Durant praise after what was a lackluster game by him in some respect. But we'll get into that and talking about his aggressiveness. And then Kerr had some other stuff to say, too. I think his comments are actually being a little overblown in terms of the amount of shots that he feels KD needs to take. So they kind of contradicted themselves, mm-hmm. Kerr and KD did, with their press conferences. But I think there's a little more, just a little too much being overblown with Kerr's statement. So we'll get into that a little later. But Anna, how are you?
I'm good. Feeling good today. We had a baseball game last night for my son. So I was the assistant coach last night, since my husband normally does it. But I was filling in for him. So it's always fun facilitating six-year-olds where they go and making sure that they pay attention to the ball.
What team does he play for?
They're all the Oakland A's, because the A's had actually donated the jerseys for all the teams in the league.
Oh, nice.
So they are the Burt Campanaris A's. So it's all different past players.
Really?
So it's pretty cool.
So they were the Burt Campanaris A's, and which other... So they're playing like another A's team?
Yeah, I forgot which team. They didn't actually say who they were last night. They just say like team this, team that.
Team Scott Brocious.
Yeah, they had the Ricky Henderson we played a couple weeks ago. I don't even know whose last night's game was. But it is kind of funny to figure out what to cheer for this team, because, you know, you say, let's go A's, right? But you're like, let's go Campy? Because you can't say A's because both teams are the A's.
So what, you have to call them by the legends' names, pretty much?
Pretty much. I mean, you don't have to, but that's what they do. Even though some people say, let's go Camps, I'm like, no, don't say Camps.
Huh.
Say Campy. A little better. Campy.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully they don't throw a bat at a pitcher like Burt Campanaris once did.
That's right.
Just helicoptered a bat right at, I forgot who the pitcher was, but that's one of the legendary shots in A's history.
That's right. Or maybe I should teach him how to do a quality bat flip like we saw yesterday in baseball. The benches clearing one in Chicago?
Yeah.
Did you see that?
Yeah, he's having a crazy season this year after having a little bit of hope last season with the White Sox, but this year he's been going off. And then that was about as emphatic of a bat flip as I've seen.
I kind
of
dug it.
I loved it.
I did too.
And so did baseball. They were tweeting out gifts and mm-hmm. stuff of like, this is the bat flip of the year. And then before you know it, you got two of the managers going out there looking like they're about to fight each other.
We need this in baseball. I mean, it just looked good. There's passion. There's energy. They need that.
Yeah, there's some pitchers out there who have that stance of, hey, you hit a home run against me, you could do whatever you want. But mm-hmm. I think Madison Bumgarner has that stance. But other pitchers are like, nah, I'm not going to allow that, which is very it's unfortunate because mm-hmm. bat flips do make the game more fun to watch in a way. I don't think it draws viewers per se, but for people who do watch baseball and are fans of it in the first place, I think they do enjoy the bat flip a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's also the idea of that gives a little energy, gives a little flair to that player. And so all of a sudden you're like, you know who that player is. You start to follow them. You like who they are. And you're going to see a lot of kids kind of emulating what they're doing.
Yeah, and people are now Tim Anderson fans. All right. So we are going to get to the schedule releases right now. What do you think of the 49ers real quick? And also, by the way, did you see all the NFL teams, most of them, majority, did little videos kind of showing the release of their schedules and showing each game? I didn't see one the 49ers did. Did the 49ers
do one? I
saw some.
For that one.
I looked back and I saw like the Raiders. They did one where mm-hmm. John Gruden is sitting in an empty movie theater and he's just looking at different plays for each team, like the Holy Roller, man. Like, you know, when the Vikings thing came up, and
yes.
then when the Willie Brown's interception went against the Vikings in the Super Bowl when they were playing against each other, the Holy Roller obviously against the Chargers, and then what was the other one that made me laugh? I forgot which team it was against, but it was just like, John Valipiano, man. That's how you make a tackle in the NFL. And I was busting up the entire time.
I'm just busting up at your impression of John Gruden. It's
pretty solid. It's pretty solid.
Very solid. Very solid.
But I texted you last night
yes.
with the tweet. The Falcons, they got the win.
They did.
They won NFL Twitter schedule releases. They did a whole Game of Thrones thing. They made fun of the Rams a little bit for that PI call on that was given to them. So I think that was actually pretty funny.
Yeah, it's kind of the opening credits of Game of Thrones. So if anybody knows that one, that's probably one of the most epic openings to a show with the music and just the whole setup and the meaning behind it. And they did basically the same thing, and they just obviously made it to their schedule. And it was epic. If you haven't seen it yet, please check it out. You will not want to miss it, especially if you're a Thrones fan.
Yeah, so the 49ers, they didn't exactly do like a game-by-game schedule release video thing. They more or less just did a pump-up video with P-Lo of HBK fame, which is a Bay Area thing. But first look at the 49ers schedule, Anna. What do you think? They're going to start out on the road against the Bucks and the Bengals. Does that first game excite you at all? What's going to be the storyline heading into this season with the 49ers and the Buccaneers in week one?
It's going to be pay attention to Jimmy Garoppolo. We want to see what Jimmy Garoppolo can do, and this is a big moment for him. He needs to step it up, obviously. It was a letdown last year with him getting hurt, and you want to make sure he's not injury prone, that he's actually worth the money that they gave him. And going up against Tampa Bay, you should be able to get that win. If you are the team that you are projected to be, that everybody was saying before that you should be, then you should be able to get the win in Tampa Bay and start the season off right.
So the month of September, they're going to be at Tampa Bay, at Cincinnati. Then they're going to be back home at Pittsburgh. And then they got the bye week early.
Yeah,
week four
bye. The earliest since 2002. That's early. That's to me one of the biggest downfalls is an early bye.
What kind of advantage do you think that might give them, or disadvantage rather?
The only advantage I see is it's going to be helpful going into the Monday night football game against Cleveland, because they have the bye before facing Cleveland. So that could be a good one, especially going into primetime, especially going up against this Cleveland team, which looks like a juggernaut.
So the Buccaneers, I guess, looking at these first four games, not including the bye week. I mean, the Buccaneers, I guess the interest drawn to that would be Arian's first game as a head coach since he's coming back. Mm-hmm. The Buccaneers have they've fallen by the wayside with Dirk Cutter, and they haven't made things work. And naturally, the Jameis Winston experiment has been a failure so far. So I'm not really seeing much of a... I'm not excited about this 49ers week one matchup at Tampa Bay. But
no, it's not that fireworks game that you're like, oh, yeah, I want to go and see this. I don't see the rest of the nation going out. And I'm talking about like the nation as in the United States, not as other nations. But I don't see the rest of them looking to say, oh, my gosh, I got to watch this 49er matchup. This is one to watch. It's not one of those.
What do you think about the... How do you say you can you predict the 49ers season? Like, do you know what this team is going to be, or is there more mystery surrounding that? Because I really don't know what this 49ers team is going to be next season. I haven't seen them live up to any sort of potential because their star quarterback, who they're paying, you know, in total 100, whatever it is, and they're paying him $27 million a year. I mean, he's been hurt, and you haven't seen what should be their leader. They also haven't been healthy at running back. They haven't been healthy at all. The only thing that's really positive on the offense is George Kittle. And, I mean, you know what he's going to bring, but what are these wide receivers going to bring? I don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. That's the biggest question mark. And I think it's we're going to have to also see what happens with the draft next week, if they're going to actually go out and get a wide receiver. They need somebody out there and see what pieces they need. And we'll see what this defense does. If they get somebody like a Nick Bosa to really help solidify that defense, because that defense could be a strength if all these pieces work together, because there's potential there in that defense.
So are you saying you think you're going to have more faith in the defense in terms of or rather more confidence in the defense heading into this season than the offense?
Depending on what they do at wide receiver. So the only thing is, as much as I love George Kittle, and I think that he does an amazing job, by the way, had a rib injury when he set his NFL record at the end of the year last year. That was a crazy fracture that he had there. But the only thing
is, against
the
Raiders, wasn't it?
I believe it was. I think you're right, actually.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I was just looking at it right now. You're right. It was against the Raiders. But the thing with him is the rest of the league going to catch up to him? You need another threat in order to keep the field open for him. So let's see what they could do. And, you know, with the acquisition of Dee Ford, Quan Alexander, are they going to be able to help that defense as well and see what they do if they get Bosa?
You know what? Now that I'm thinking about it, mm-hmm. when you got guys like Gronk, Travis Kelce, who's another elite? Zach Ertz.
Yeah.
The teams that they play on are good.
Yep.
And it's funny thinking about when you've got a superstar tight end, how good those teams actually are. I mean, you got the Patriots, the Eagles, and the Chiefs. They've all been thriving on offense, especially for the past few years, and that's because they've also got pieces around those tight ends. So, you know, you add a wide receiver on there, you get a healthy Garoppolo. Yeah, that's why I have a lot of mystery surrounding this, because those are big ifs. Those are huge ifs.
Yeah.
But if you do, it could be a potent offense this season. So I'm looking at these first four games in September, not including the bye week, or three games rather. And I mean, the Steelers have been falling apart. I don't know what's going to be. That's going to be an interesting team mm-hmm. this season. I don't know what's going to go on with them. The Browns coming up in October on that Monday night game. Have you seen the hype that the Browns have been getting ever since this schedule release? I don't know if this was a Photoshopped thing on Twitter, but Lewis Riddick had, they showed Lewis Riddick on SportsCenter, ESPN, one of those shows, and he literally had a W in every single column. I don't know if it was a joke or whatever it was, but someone took a picture of the TV and said, okay, this is getting blown out of proportion a little bit. And I think I just saw some MJD has them getting at least double-digit wins. So the Browns, that Monday night game, there's going to be so much hype surrounding that.
The Browns have four primetime games. When was the last time we've seen the Browns get that many games?
Never.
Yeah. Never. I don't think I could ever.
They've had like four total in the past 20 years.
Yeah, exactly.
Because who wants to watch the Browns?
Nobody. But now you do. You have Odell Beckham Jr. on that team. You have some great players on this team. This team has really been building, and it's going to be an interesting game going up against when the 49ers play them at home on Monday night. It's going to be must-see TV.
Freddie Kitchens coming into town. And then after that, they're going to go at the L.A. Rams, at the Redskins, and then they're back home against the Panthers. Then they're against the Cardinals. We'll actually continue to get into this on the other side. And there's also a streak in baseball that I want to get to that has come to an end that everyone is going to continue to overlook, but I'm not going to overlook it. I am going to blow this out of proportion.
As you should.
And we are going to get to the Kerr sound on Kevin Durant, then Kevin Durant talking about what went wrong in last night's the game from a couple of nights ago. We'll get into all that. Stephen Langford and Anna Kakadaki's in on the pregame show on 95.7 The Game.
Greg Papa tells you the truth, even if it's hard to hear.
Durant, you're here for now. You scolded us the other day. Just watch the game. Nobody watches the game closer than me. You watched the game back. He was awful. You are way better than this. Just terrible.
Listen to Papa and Bonte weekdays from noon to 3.
I'm
the Bay Area's number one sports station, 95.7. The Game. Now, back to the pregame show on 95.7 The Game. Here's Stephen Langford and Anna Kagarakis.
Pregame show is presented by Golden State Lumber. Join Golden State Lumber for golden mornings at the Building Bar for a coffee meet and greet with their product experts. Visit goldenstatelumber.com for dates and more information.
Who is this, by the way? I like this.
I don't know. Cody. Oh, no. This is not... I'm so glad I don't know this song. You should be glad you don't know this song.
Oh, no. Why?
It's called... What's it called, Cody? Just say it on the air. I know your headphones aren't on, so you can't hear me, but...
Old Town Road.
Oh, my goodness. It's the worst thing ever.
Old Town Road.
Yeah. This guy, Lil Nas X, he's this young guy. Oh, he's trying country rap. And then Lil Nas X.
Oh, excuse me.
Lil Nas X. Yes.
Don't forget that X.
Old Town Road, if you hear it, it's... I've listened to it once.
Country rap, you think?
He tries to make like a country rap song, and I threw my phone at my bathroom mirror because I tend to watch music videos when I'm in the bathroom, and then I literally almost threw my phone at the mirror. I was really angry, and Billy Ray Cyrus is a part of it. I don't know why.
That's great.
By the way.
I learned a lot about you in that little story. I don't know how much I wanted to learn about you on that one, but that's okay.
Well, you know, you live and you learn.
We get to know each other very well on this show.
Okay, so real quick.
Yeah.
We are going to continue from 510 horses in the back. Yeah. Real quick, I want to get to this streak because this streak that's been broken, we're going to get to the schedule. We're going to continue to discuss that.
Right.
We're going to get to KD and Kerr's comments about what they saw last game and how they're going to improve moving forward. But this stat by Joey Votto, it got brought to light last year. Last season, maybe two seasons ago, but we're realizing that this dude has not hit a foul ball or a pop-up to the first baseman in his entire career. We found that out last year. He'd been playing it was his 12th season last year. Now, let's put this into perspective. This one guy is Joey Votto of the Cincinnati Reds. And he popped out to Cody Bellinger last night in the eighth inning in their loss against the Dodgers. This is the first time that he popped out to the first baseman in 6,827 plate appearances.
That's ridiculous. That just seems surreal.
So Joey Votto, in his entire career, by the way you found out about Joey Votto, yes, it's in that random 2008 fantasy baseball draft where you needed to pick up a first baseman last second and you didn't know who to get. Joey Votto was that guy. That's probably how you heard of him. This dude, throughout his career, has been known for his consistency. He put up big numbers in some seasons, but for the most part, what he's been known for, people, especially coaches, they teach young kids the way Joey Votto approaches the plate with two strikes. His plate discipline is off the charts. He's been one of the elite sort of just overall fundamental hitters in this league. And this dude hasn't popped up to a first baseman in his entire career. 6,827 plate appearances. Now, I know we talk about records and which one's better. I think you put those in certain classes, certain records. And this one, I think, is right up there with the Cal Ripken class for the most consecutive games, whatever it was, 2,000 or something like that. Mm-hmm. That's going to be a record that never will be broken. This one is never going to be broken.
Yeah, I can't see that being broken at all. I mean, just that number, just the idea of it is absolutely ridiculous. Like you said, 6,820, almost 7,000 plate appearances. And the fact that he never did that, I'm just dumbfounded by it. But you're right, it is plate discipline. It is the fact that he can go out there and just, he can take care of business. And I've never heard of that before.
You seem dumbfounded.
I am, because the idea, when you brought it up to me, I was like, oh my gosh, you're right. I looked this up and...
Yeah.
I mean, what's the closest? I can't even find the closest number. I was trying to look it up.
No one knows. No one knows. Probably the closest, 20.
Yes.
Because that's what I'd consider good. Is that what you'd consider good, popping out to the first baseman once in maybe every 20 at-bats? That'd be considered okay. I don't know. Is that like a good scale? 20 at bats? That might be a little too little. I don't
know. Maybe a little smaller. I'd say maybe the most I could ever think of is maybe 100.
I'm thinking about it, and it's not that it's hard. It's just that it's so easy to do.
Yeah, everybody does that. And I mean, you're right.
What, you're late on a fastball? You're probably going to pop it up. You guess a breaking ball, but you get under it. Probably going to pop it up. There's so many instances in which you can pop it up. And this dude, Joey Votto, hasn't done it for nearly 7,000 at-bats. That's insane. That's going to go down as the most underrated record of all time. It's not going to be beaten. I think Barry Bonds' home run record for a single season, it will be beaten. His total home run record, it could be beaten eventually. I don't know if it's now or 30 years from now, but eventually it'll get beaten. This one will not.
Okay. How about this insane statistic? Considering there were 2,206 pop-outs to first base in the majors last year. That's how many there were last year in Major League Baseball. And you have nearly 7,000 career plate appearances, and that's how long it takes for you to finally pop out to first base? Ridiculous.
If it wasn't such just a little simple topic, I'd literally do an hour on it. If we didn't have Warriors Clippers tonight.
Because we got a lot.
Going into it. If we didn't have the schedule releases. I mean, I'd be doing this for an hour because to anyone who's even played, if you haven't paid attention to baseball, that's fine. But if you've played like a year of it or two, you understand how easy it is to pop the ball up, especially when you're trying to hit a home run and you miss it. You get under it, and you always pop it up every single time, especially when you're younger. You know how that feels. This dude hasn't done that for 7,000 plate appearances. Almost 7,000. 6,827.
That's
whatever.
Pretty close, so come on now. You got to give him props. I mean, maybe if he had 7,000, it would be a bigger deal.
All right. I spent a little longer on that than I expected.
No,
but that's...
It deserves it. It deserves it.
That gets me. Okay, so in the month of October, we're going to get for the rest of the schedule for the 49ers. But they're at home against the Browns for Monday Night Football. They're at the Rams. They're at Washington. They're going to be back at home against the Panthers. Then they're at the Cardinals. Do you see them going 0-2 against the Cardinals again this season?
I hope not. I would think it's split. I could see. It depends on what happens. It depends on, let's see, will the Cardinals get Kyler Murray first?
Right.
With the first overall pick. Let's see how Kyler adjusts to the NFL. I think he'll do just fine in the NFL. I could see them splitting the series, though.
It's going to be a Thursday night football game at Arizona. That's going to be on Halloween night.
They have a nice amount of time in between, though, because they have the Thursday. I'm sorry. I know I was looking at the wrong before. But no, you're right. And then because then you're going up against Seattle the next week. You have two primetime games back to back.
Two primetime games. That's going to be a big swing for them, especially in that month. I don't know how good having time off is in the NFL specifically. Coming off a bye week, it actually all depends on the coaching. Mm-hmm. I mean, Andy Reid is unstoppable coming off a bye week. Bill Belichick's unstoppable coming off a bye week.
Yeah.
So all these elite coaches, Kyle Shanahan, that's going to show everything, how good you are, especially when you're going against the Browns coming off the bye week or whatever. And then you got about 10 days in between.
Well, they're facing
Thursday night football and Monday night.
Yeah,
football.
They're facing Carolina the week before they face Arizona. So you have a team without Cam Newton, most likely. So, I mean, I think that should be okay for them to be able to adjust to get ready for Thursday night.
And they're back against the Cardinals. Oof, week 9-11. I mean, you can count me out. I don't want to watch two games against the Cardinals.
No,
two out of 3 weeks. I mean, come on.
They have a very road-heavy schedule early on this season.
That they do.
Yeah, very road-heavy early. Middle of the season looks a little bit easier for them. And then, the December is all over the place.
Down the stretch is really where it gets tough. They're going to be at home for a majority of the month of November. And then they're going to be at the Ravens and at the Saints.
Yeah.
Then they're going to be against the Falcons over in December. At Ravens and at Saints. Those two are kind of scary on the schedule. And going down the home stretch of the season, especially in the final month, you're going to need to get any win you can get. And going to, Baltimore in December.
Yeah. Ooh, nice and cold out there. Are you going to stay out? Here's the question. Do you stay out there in the wintertime? Stay around the East Coast area and just kind of hang out or go head south afterwards? Or do you come back home? I mean, you have back-to-backs. What do you do at that point?
If I'm on the East Coast, I just go to Miami every single time. Go to South Beach.
Well, you got to be careful. Watch out for that Miami flu that the Warriors apparently got before.
I'd risk it. Okay, from the 408 on the Chilton Auto Body text line. That's not a great record. Ricky Henderson's record will never be broke, both single season and entire career. Yeah, sure, okay. I'm not trying to say that this is a better record than any other one. I'm just trying to say that this is unbeatable. No one's going to break this one. You're not going to get a pop-up to the first baseman. Now, let's make this clear. He has popped up before.
Yeah.
It's not like this is just a no pop-up situation. He has popped up, but not to the first baseman. And for a left-handed hitter, that's kind of crazy. So
keep respect where it's due, people.
Seriously. Like,
come on.
Like, I mean, what are you saying? Not that great a record. Get out of here, 408. From the 209, is a line drive to the first baseman considered a pop-up? No, it is not. A pop-up, I don't know what's considered a line drive or a pop-up, but I do know that the line drives are not the same. I don't know the exact parameters for a line drive, but I do know for a fact that they do not count the same.
Maybe something about exit velocity.
Whatever, launch angle.
Yeah, there you go.
You never
know.
Now, looking on the other side, the Raiders got the toughest schedule I've ever seen.
Right.
I mean, so what? You're going to be at home against the Broncos for Monday Night Football, mm-hmm. then against the Chiefs. But here's where it gets tricky. So Broncos and Chiefs, those two are going to be great games. They always are, especially at home, last season in Oakland. But then you're going on the road to face the Vikings, the Colts. So you're going to go to Minnesota. Then you're going to go to Indy. Then you're going to travel. This is only going to take a week, by the way. All the way over to good old London town.
Ah, your hometown.
Yeah, right? And they're trying to push the NFL like crazy last time I went there. Then they're on their way to face the Bears and Khalil Mack. That's my least anticipated matchup. I don't need to see
I'm
that.
I'm opposite on you. I want to see that.
I don't need to see this. No.
I'm excited to see this one.
This is the whole reason why their schedule is the way it is. They didn't have time to create the schedule because they traded Khalil Mack after the schedules were released last season. Mm-hmm. But this year, this is coming back to bite them right now for trading Khalil Mack, in my opinion. That's why they have this schedule. Then they got a bye week, and they're on their way to Green Bay. Then they're on their way to Houston. So away games at Minnesota, Indy, then you're England to face the Bears. Then you got a bye week. What do you do in that week? I don't know. You got to go to Green Bay after that. Facing Aaron Rodgers is never easy, especially when he actually has a coach with an IQ, with Matt LaFleur or whatever his name is. And then the Houston Texans away in Texas. And then you're back at home to face the Lions. I looked at this yesterday, and I'm like, I don't see a win until week 9.
Let's reiterate this here. So September 15th is their home.
Mm-hmm. They're
and
at
then
home.
They do not get back to Oakland because their home game is in London.
Yeah.
They are not back home in Oakland until November 3rd.
Yeah, yeah. So they got an entire month.
Yes. Wow.
Yeah, I like Ross Tucker. He wrote a piece on The Athletic, former offensive lineman. He does great work on, I think, Sirius XM NFL radio. And he talked about how players and coaches, when this sort of stuff comes out, they don't really care. They do look toward the bye week, but in terms of road games and all that, they don't really care about playing on the road. They just focus really going by week to week. But at the same time, if you're a player on the Raiders right now and you see September 15th is your last home game until November 3rd, and that's to start out your season, if I'm a player, I'm not looking at that thinking, oh, yeah, that's an advantage. And also they're playing the Jaguars at home for their last game in Oakland.
Oh, that's
not
exciting.
Into that.
Oh,
not
God,
into that.
I didn't even see that one. Yeah, the teams that they're playing on the road during that stretch are all really good playoff contending teams, too. So you have a tough, tough early schedule. And, oh, you're right. Jacksonville to end in Oakland.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. Couldn't they have done something a little bit more of a... Well, maybe they wanted them to try to get a win, actually.
Last season...
A W for their last Oakland game.
Yeah. Yeah, last season I thought was the last game in Oakland, but apparently not. Standing at that stadium, kind of sulking, just looking at it for a half hour after the game was over was not worth it.
Are you going this year?
Ooh, it'll be tough, but yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You got to try it.
Yeah. Right now, I'd say no, but I'm not. Yeah, when the season starts, yeah. You'll be going to those.
From the Chilton Auto Body text line from the 510, we're starting off 2-0 Raider Nation. So you're very optimistic going up against. You can do it. You never know.
No, yeah.
Denver and Kansas City.
100%. And you could go 2-0.
Might be a little tough.
Oh, 100%. But they might be without Tyreek Hill, which could be interesting.
That's true.
But... At the same time, I mean, that road schedule at the beginning of the season, that's not going to favor anyone. All right. We've blown by the break here. I want to get to some sound from Kerr and KD talking about game three coming up. We got Bogut, who's starting at center, which actually is an interesting decision. So we'll get into that. Plus, there's also sound from the Patriots that I want to play, which involves one Rob Gronkowski. Stephen Langford and Anna Kakarakis in on the pregame show on 95.7 The Game.
Warriors. Clippers. Game three.
Right down Broadway for let's go.
Tonight at 7:30. Coverage starts at 6.
Ridiculous.
Only on 95.7. The Game. Back to the pregame show on 95.7 The Game. Here's Stephen Langford and Anna Kakarakis.
Thank you for sliding in with us. Ooh, that was awkward. I tried making a play on words with slide because of the slide by Calvin Harris and it didn't work.
Slide to the left, slide to the right. No, I can't think of anything, but it was a good attempt.
Thank you, Anna.
I'll give you some props. Not a lot, but a little bit.
Slide into the DMs. Thank you, Cody.
There you go.
The pregame show is presented by Golden State Lumber. Join Golden State Lumber for Golden Mornings at the Building Bar for a coffee meet and greet with their product experts. Visit goldenstatelumber.com for dates and more information. This is better than Old Town Road or whatever that crap was you played earlier.
I like the sound of the music, though, in Old Town Road.
The production, the instrumental, that's fine.
I thought it was nice, that's instrumental, fine.
Yeah, you should listen to the lyrics. Then, nope.
Like Little Twang.
Yeesh.
Little Twang is cool. Kind of sounds off. You know, that does kind of sound a little creepy. Like that
it's
sounds
ominous.
Like a, yeah, it sounds like some. There you go. The beginning sounded like something from, like, what movie?
This sounds like it'd be something from Gangster Game of Thrones.
Gangster Game of Thrones. That should be a fun take. Should make that.
A Gangster Game of Thrones.
Yeah, that'd be good. I'd watch that.
All right, so we've been talking about the schedules, and we'll get more into all of that after the draft and everything. I mean, the draft's coming up. I don't know if there's really. I'm looking at all these players. I'm looking at, you know, film, tape, whatever you want to call it. And for me, in the top 10, it's hard to really go wrong this year, considering you got a couple of pass rushers that are going to be going well. Nick Bosa and Josh Allen, both those guys, you've been hearing their names constantly if you've been paying attention to any draft talk, and they live up to the billing because if you watch their tape, there's really not much in terms of mistakes. They just jump out at you, and right. It's the same with Quinnen Williams as well. The dude just jumps out at you. It's kind of like Von Miller when he beats a tackle right off the snap. It's the same with Quinnen Williams. The dude is just quick. So,
and he's also been very likable at the NFL draft when they at the combine, I believe it was, and some of the interviews that teams have had with him, they said how great of a guy he is.
Yeah.
How he actually says how he spent his mom was a huge influence on him because she had passed away, and what he, you know, how he took a lot of responsibility with his family. So he seems like a really good guy, and a lot of people really spoke highly of him.
Well, looking forward to it.
Yeah. It's gonna be interesting draft day.
Okay, so real quick, we are going to get to this Kerr and Kevin Durant sound, like I promised you. Game three, Clippers-Warriors tonight. The station's going to be getting ready for you, or you ready for that all day. It's going to be just a lot of NFL schedule, a lot of game three. They're going to be getting you prepared, but this is one thing, hopefully, that doesn't fall through the cracks, so they say. But slip through the cracks? Fall through the cracks?
Slip through the cracks.
Slip? Yeah. Okay. Well,
just don't slide.
So the good one. I mean, your top roping at 5:41.
That's what I do.
Oh my god! All right, save that for 6 to 10.
Okay.
All right.
Let's try.
So the Patriots, they went to the Red Sox game and they were throwing out the first pitch to celebrate their championship. And beforehand, so let's just paint the picture here. They were in a tent, and you got all the players there. And I think there's a couple that are going to throw out the first pitch in Julian Edelman and Rob Gronkowski, now retired Rob Gronkowski. So they were practicing in the back under this little tent. Julian Edelman used to be a pitcher back in the day, so he's a natural at throwing. Rob Gronkowski isn't exactly. But Gronkowski did something, and Julian Edelman was pitching, and Gronkowski pretended that he was the batter. And what was he using as his bat? It was the Lombardi Trophy, and take a listen.
And it was all fun and games until it wasn't.
A lot of interesting things happen.
Gronk thought of a great idea. He'd play around and get a swing. And as he's lined up, Jules is the pitcher. Gronk standing there, and I think we're all under the impression, I mean, no way is he going to swing a Lombardi trophy.
A little strange. We're thinking he's not going to swing the bat. He's not going to do it. And literally, at the last second, when 11 throws the ball, we see 87 go from a batting position to a bunt.
Probably not ideal.
Yeah, Gronkowski's parting gift.
Sometimes things happen.
That smack you heard was him denting the Lombardi trophy by holding it out for a bunt.
The smack was just, oh my gosh, that you hear that. He left his mark for sure with the Patriots. Wow, the smack is surreal too.
Gotta give the shout out to the New England Patriots for making it out with like a true crime documentary, and they're playing the music in the background.
I'm telling
like,
you, it's
the
an
chives.
Ominous segment here.
Yeah. You see the video, and he holds out the Lombardi trophy, and Edelman goes in for a pitch, and they fade it out, and all you hear is this.
Did he not think it was going to do anything? I mean, what was he thinking, just holding the Lombardi
trophy? It's drunk. He wasn't thinking.
You're right. You're right.
I mean, the dude has whatever going on in his head. I mean, it's definitely not intelligence when it comes to – or not, I'm not going to say he's not intelligent because he actually is in terms of what he's done with his contract and all his money. Got to give him props for all of that.
Yeah, he hasn't used any of his money. He only used, I think, his endorsement money or something to pay for things.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it turns out that common sense – isn't exactly all that common with Rob Gronkowski, but I'm going to miss that guy.
I am too. I'm going to miss him so much. He was so great. The best sound bites ever come from him.
Yeah.
But I guess the Patriots just get so many Lombardi trophies, it doesn't matter if one gets dented.
All right. So dealer's choice here. We got about 15 minutes left in the show, and we are going to be talking Game 3 against the Warriors and the Clippers. Naturally, the story that came out of Game 2, the big one, was surprisingly, what kind of took over the 31-point comeback was Kevin Durant's turnover-to-shot ratio and how aggressive he should be. But one thing that's kind of surprising, though, since the Boogie injury happened, they actually put Bogut at the starting center position instead of Looney. Were you surprised by that at all?
Not really, because I know that he has a good veteran presence. He's been in this position before, and I think Steve Kerr trusts him. And I think at the end, that's what it comes down to, is trust, and also because of his defensive abilities.
And we're going to hear from Steve Kerr right now. He talked about it after practice.
Well, Bogut will start, and that way we keep Loon in his same role, backing up the center position. And I think that makes the most sense. Looney's been tremendous. He's had a fantastic season and first couple of playoff games, and I think Bogut will do a great job. I mean, he's been great too since he's been back, and this is why we got him, just in case. We were hoping, you know, we wouldn't have any injuries, obviously, but that was our most vulnerable position, and we're lucky to have Andrew.
So clearly they think that Kevon Looney is better suited for his role on the bench. I mean, he's been hot. Mm-hmm. He's only missed one field goal so far this series of playing in that role. He went upwards of double-digit points last time, and then he only had 6 points in game one, but he ended up being a plus 30 on the floor, so he had value in there. So in the end, I think this is a good move in order to put Bogut in there. I don't think they're going to be playing him maybe more than 20 minutes or so. I think we're going to get a good, healthy balance of Kevon Looney subbing in for him at center, and then we're going to see the Hamptons five out there possibly.
Yeah,
well.
I like what Steve Kerr said. It sounds like a lot of consistency. Make sure, you know, give him the opportunity to succeed. Having him come in the same spot that he normally does, because it's been working, obviously. And we talked about it also after game two, that I thought it was kind of weird that they didn't go to him more in the fourth quarter because he was so hot and because he was so efficient. I think he was going for 6 for 6, I believe, at that point. So
yeah.
I think it's a good move. I think Steve Kerr knows what he's putting his players in the right positions to succeed.
For some reason, I don't know why, but Looney seems to be making these mid-range shots that I really haven't seen him make. I was at the game at game two, and at the start when they had the 31-point lead before that, when the team was, you know, they were feeling themselves, Kevon Looney was in the post, and he'd hit a fadeaway jumper, and he'd make it. And then you'd see Clay and Bogut go nuts on the bench.
Mm-hmm.
That's because he doesn't make those shots normally. So seeing that he's been making shots that he doesn't normally make this series, and I think it's going to be a positive in the end and save up some energy, man. I mean, you're going to have to disperse this bench somehow. The rotations are going to be interesting. That's going to be kind of the number one thing I'm looking out for tonight. is just how the rotations go. I want to see how much time Quinn Cook gets in the game. I want to see how much time Jarebko gets in the game. I want to see the impact of McKinney. This game for the bench is, or I mean, the series for the bench, the rest of the playoffs for the bench, it's going to be huge.
Yeah, and I think if you see more bench time, that means that they're going to be taking a substantial lead at that point, because you, that means your starters have done their job, and that you want the bench to actually step up as well, because the Clippers bench has been their strong suit, as we've seen Lou Williams, you've seen Montrezl Harrell as well, you know, really making a huge impact against this Warrior team.
Those are the two names. Those are the two names out there that are just, that are making the headlines right now, especially against the Warriors. Do you think, real quick, do you think over or under 40 points for them both, for Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell combined?
Because
they've been hitting that over. I mean, it might be a key to get that under, but you think over or under 40 points for them total?
I'm going
to
say over, because they are a huge part of that bench, and they're pretty much the huge part of the whole score offense for the Clippers. Mm-hmm. So I'd say I believe that they're going to go with them for I would go over with them.
And we are going to have to watch out for Danilo Gallinari as well, as he had a big game. He is their most expensive starter on that roster. So we'll see how that all goes, but I mean, Bogut starting, that's kind of the number one takeaway from yesterday's practice. But the number two thing, the kind of stuff behind the scenes, so to speak, was talking about Kevin Durant's aggressiveness in this last game, and he ended up having more shot more turnovers than shot attempts. And it, you know, we press Kevin Durant a lot. If anything goes wrong, we find any way to nitpick what went wrong with him, whether he's shooting too much or passing too much, whatever it is. And there has to be a balance between it. But Steve Kerr talked about it yesterday, and I want you to take a listen. This is what he said about KD being more aggressive.
Look, the guy's the most skilled basketball player on planet Earth. There's nobody who can do what he can do. It's the playoffs. Defenses are more locked in. They play everybody tougher. I don't know how many shots he got the other night, 7, 8. Yeah, I mean, yeah, absolutely, he needs to be more aggressive. It's playoffs, and he can get any shot he wants anytime. So I want to see him get 20 shots, 30.
So you hear that at the end. You hear Steve Kerr say he wants to get 20 shots, 30. And then here's also what Kevin Durant had to say, though.
I'm not going to go out there and just go shoot 20 or 30 shots. You know, I don't play like that. So, I mean, we were up 30 points. So I had 5 shots. Everybody's shots were kind of evenly distributed around that time. We were up 30. So me taking 2 more shots after that wasn't a reason why we lost.
Now, Kevin Durant had some fantastic sound breaking down what Beverly was doing. We're going to get to that in a little bit. But hearing those two things, what's your initial reaction when you hear the head coach say something that completely contradicts what Kevin Durant said?
So last year, I believe we were giving him a hard time because, not we, but people were giving him a hard time because he was playing apparently too much iso ball. It was too much only Kevin Durant, the Kevin Durant show. Well, now he is passing the rock more. I think that Steve Kerr is kind of giving him the, hey, it's okay to take more of the shots. I see them as actually kind of finding a way to meet in the middle in this, where you want more from Kevin Durant, but you also want him to not only be taking the ball all the time, but he doesn't. I think that's what I think it is. I think it's going to be that they're going to kind of meet in the middle, find an average in the middle there, and that he'll be shooting more than obviously he has, but he's also going to be an efficient passer.
One thing that we forget about this game is they did give up the lead, but they had a 31-point lead going into the third quarter for a reason, or rather in the middle of the third quarter. For a reason, because they were dominating in that game, especially defensively. The defense is what slipped in that second half. You could have had all the turnovers you wanted. You could have missed all the shots you wanted. It wouldn't make up for any of that terrible defense that was played in the second half, because they had no answer for Lou Williams on the pick and roll at the time. So I don't think it's a question of whether KD needs to be more aggressive. You know what I mean? I don't think it's a question of KD's play. I don't think he needs to overcompensate for anything. I just think he needs to go out there and, like he says, play basketball. He's the best scorer we've ever seen, and he's one of the best players we've ever seen. I trust Kevin Durant's judgment more than I trust anyone else's in terms of what he should do in this game.
100%. Also, I think the issue was that we forget that there was foul issues. Steph Curry got into foul problems early on, so he sat a lot longer. You have Kevin Durant. He actually fouled out, so if he was there at the end of the game, he might have been able to get some of those crucial shots. It would have spread the floor out more. So it would have been a different tone at the end of the game, and they could have come away with the win if they hadn't let everything slip away, obviously. That's to me, that's the biggest issue, was that they let it slip away, but they also got into foul issues, and they had some rotation issues as well.
And hopefully Steph Curry doesn't get a fourth foul already by the third game. Steve Kerr was on with Damon yesterday, and I didn't grab this cup, but he did say that if Steph Curry gets four fouls in that third quarter with 8 minutes left, I'm sitting him again.
Yep.
That's exactly what I'm going to do. From the 510, KD on the Chill Not a Body text line, KD is always ready to get defensive instead of taking constructive criticism. Who should he I mean, how can we say that, especially, like, what constructive criticism from who? I mean, we can't say he doesn't take constructive criticism from his coaches because we don't see the interactions between him and Kerr. What, is he supposed to take constructive criticism from us? He's the one playing the game. We can analyze it as much as we want, but at the same time, he doesn't need to listen to, and we can analyze it all we want. We can talk about it all we want. But in the end, Kevin Durant knows what's best for Kevin Durant, and he's going to make whatever decision he has to make. But him and Draymond, they had a lot of scrutiny for not talking to the media after this last game. And Kevin Durant gave probably his most insightful answer that he's given ever since he's been here in California, talking about Patrick Beverley, what they were doing on defense, and why they stopped. And take a listen to Kevin Durant. And this is why he took the day off and needed, or from a press conference, and needed time to think about what he was going to really say to the media. Take a listen.
Let's go back to the whole last month of the season. We've been playing this way for a while. And when we got to the series, game one, we had some nice momentum. They're playing a gimmick defense, which has been working, top blocking everything on the perimeter. So guys not even looking at the three-point line. They're just forcing guys inside the three-point line. So for us, when I get the ball in my spots, I got a pest, Patrick Beverley, who was up underneath me. Well, I could definitely shoot over top and score every time if it's a one-on-one situation. But we got a guy that's dropping and helping, and then we got another guy that's just sitting on me waiting for me to dribble the basketball. If I put the basketball on the floor, I could probably make 43% of my shots if I shoot them like that. But that's not really going to do nothing for us at with the outcome of the game, because we got a nice flow. Everybody touching the rock, everybody shooting and scoring. So I'm not going to get in the way of the game because, I want to have a little back and forth with Patrick Beverley. I'm Kevin Durant. You know who I am. Y'all know who I am.
We know who he is.
Oh, yeah.
He's Kevin Durant. And earlier in the season, when he's making 40-plus points, the Warriors had, a losing record or something like that. So you can tell that he probably took that into account and realized, hey, I got to distribute more. And he knows that he can make any shot that he wants. It's obvious for him that he can just go one-on-one with Patrick Beverley every time, but that's just not how the team flows. That's not how you move the ball. That's not how their offense works. So there were times, for sure, I actually ended up rewatching a little bit of the game. There are times, for sure, where Kevin Durant was on Landry Shamet. There was two or three times where he was on a guard, and he made an errant pass that ended up being a turnover, right, which ended up costing them. But there were certainly times where he could just take it and go one-on-one, but he's not going to do that every time.
No, and he won't do that every time. And what I got out of this, too, is one, he has the confidence to go out there and do what he needs to do. I think right after Tuesday night, the first thing he did was watch game film. I mean, listening to how he laid everything out, you could tell why he has such a high basketball IQ. He knows this game so well.
Better than anyone here.
I mean, seriously. And I trust what he says, and I think that he is going to come out here. I think he's really not letting Patrick Beverley get to him, and I think tonight he might have just a stellar game. As long as he really believes in what he's saying, he's going to go out there and really showcase.
And Patrick Beverley, he's been giving him fits. It's going to be a test, and the thing is, it's kind of refreshing, I guess you could say. Maybe it isn't. I don't know. I'm actually on the fence now about this when I'm, really thinking
position.
About it.
Because right,
I had one frame of mind thinking about this earlier after I heard what Patrick Beverley said. But Patrick Beverley said, there's no beef between us. We're just playing the game. Do you kind of want there to be beef between them a little bit? Do you want it to get heated? Do you want these to be kind of rivalry-like games?
I don't mind it either way.
Get violent a little bit in game three.
Get a little violent. It's entertaining.
Yeah.
It's more entertaining. I think TNT or ABC, whoever it is on tonight, I think they want it. I think they're going to want it. I think 95.7 The Game, when we have all the games here, all the playoff action here, I think we want to hear it. I think all the fans want to hear it. But at the same time, it doesn't make a huge difference to me as well. I'm kind of on the fence with you on this, but It's entertaining.
I kind of wish the refs would look at Patrick Beverley's comments, though, and kind of realize that what they're doing isn't malicious or violent. They're just playing the game. We should let them play the game. And the refs have had a tough time doing that these past couple of games. Do you think that that can make any sort of difference? Do you think any refs are watching what Patrick Beverley is saying and saying, hey, these two are just playing basketball the way that they think it should be played. Let's let them play on.
I don't think they pay attention to that, unfortunately. They should. I'm with you on that. They should. Let them play it out a little bit more. It is the playoffs. It's not the regular season. You want that grittiness. You want that fun in the game. So, like I said, it's entertaining, and I think it's the best. I wouldn't mind to see a little bit more of it.
Yeah, and it's not like the calls that they were making. There were some that were pretty soft, but overall, when you're making when you're putting someone to the line 76 times, when you're putting both teams to the line 76 total, the Warriors like 45 times, there's certainly something there. But that's just too much.
Yeah, just a bit there.
They got to let them play.
It takes over. It completely messes up the flow of the game. And I know that it did for both sides. You can't say it's one side or the other, but it messes up the flow. I want a little bit more of that aggressive basketball.
Doesn't make it enjoyable at the game, I can tell you that much. Watching it from up there in the second deck, two rows from Oracle Arena's crust. I like to call it the crust, the outer edge.
I love that.
Because I'm literally looking back and there's a hazard warning behind me. But at the same time, you really can't get a bad seat.
What's the hazard for?
I have no idea. That's my question. Me and my mother, I went with my mom. We were wondering what exactly that meant. I guess the hazard is, hey, this is really high up. Just don't do anything stupid.
Yeah, that's
I guess we're the hazard. The fans are the hazard.
Well, you specifically might be the hazard. Maybe that was just for you.
I mean, there weren't many people screaming, unfortunately, in that game behind me. I was expecting a little more energy from the second
deck. It sounded like there was a lot of energy
through
the TV. It sounded like there was a ton of energy.
There was. The arena was great. I'm just talking about the people around me. They didn't really seem to know what was going on.
So what do you think the Warriors are going to do tonight? How is it going to finish at the end?
Well, with 20 seconds left in the show, I think they're going to go and roll them. A 31-point lead. They got it for a reason. They're not just going to let it go again. They're going to play full 48 minutes because they need to, and they know that. So I don't think they're going to – I think they're going to roll them. All right, so Randy Cross coming up with Joe Lowe and Dibs at 7, Greg Papa at 8:30, Sam Amick at 9:10, and Matt Barrows at 9:35. And anything else?
44 points from KD.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.